great for you to be on. No Sleep Till McSorley's is sweet. I thought
Oh.
it was. I listened to it. I honestly think it's like your best special so
Oh,
far.
wow.
It's your fifth record, right?
Yeah, I mean, usually, whatever you do in your career, you hopefully get better. So, I'm glad I'm at least progressing a little bit. But I feel the same way. But it's like every band says that this is our best album. The new one's always the best. But I do think this one is. I'm really proud of it. And of course, I love the packaging. I always do a tribute to one of my favorite bands, and took 5 CDs to get to Motorhead. But it all came together the right way.
Yeah, for sure. And you got in touch with like their manager, right? I believe you got in touch with their manager. You got all the official art and everything, which is sweet. I'd love to know, what's your relationship with McSorley's?
Just a place I've been going to for like 30 years, because it's I used to live in New York City. I live in New Jersey now, but McSorley's is still the hub where you connect and reconnect with friends, so you don't lose touch. Because people get married, they get divorced, they have kids, they get a job out of town, whatever, and it's easy to not talk to people that you're fond of for a long time. And McSorley's is always the place. Like, all right, you're in town, we're going to McSorley's, and you sit there and you drink McSorley's ale, and you solve all the world's problems. And that's why I thought that's got to be the perfect place to do this album, because in my head, I'm trying to solve the world's problems on this album, hopefully in a humorous way. And so, when it came time to pick a spot, I said McSorley's is the place. And I asked the owner, could I, record my album here, my special, and how much would it cost to rent the place out? And she said, "How long you been coming here?" I said, "30 years." She said, "You paid enough. No problem."
Why such unique venues for your stand-up CDs? Because I know, didn't you do a speakeasy the
Yeah.
last one? Yeah. Like, what are you gonna do, like the Rainbow next, do you think?
I'd love to do, yeah, that would be a great spot. I did an album release party. My first one was actually upstairs, at Above the Rainbow. So we did do a little stand-up thing up there once. I would, because I do like doing my albums in weird places. Yeah, the last one, Denim and Laughter, was at a literal speakeasy in Los Angeles. I was hoping like that would be great ending to the album, to have the cops, bust down the door and come in and pull me off stage. And then I did one of my albums down at the Jersey Shore at a BYOB comedy club that I love. And I left all the people who brought, like, this woman had a bottle of wine on her table, and she was drunk halfway through the show, and she knocked the bottle over, and you could hear a clang across the floor. So I like to include the character of the room that I'm in, right? Because you listen to a lot of comedy albums and you go, well, this could be in St. Louis, it could be in San Francisco, it could be in Detroit, So I try to bring in the character of the room as well. And for me, McSorley's is like, this material was meant to be done in front of beer drinkers and Hellraisers.
For sure. And I feel like it's very fitting with your whole style, like to have a little bit of chaos mixed into it. You know, it's always good, especially opening for bands and stuff. I can't imagine starting that, like doing that. I've opened for only like a couple bands. And thankfully there's like enough bootleg. I think there's a bootleg of you opening for like Anvil.
Probably, yeah.
And I was going into this being like, I'm gonna fucking eat a dick up there. This is gonna suck. I had a buddy, Danny Kelly, who was a regular at the Comedy Store. He opened for Air Supply, and he said it was maybe the worst gig he's ever done. He said he brought up the band after, and the singer fired him on stage. So I'm like, fuck, dude, it was one of the funnest gigs ever. There's something about metalheads where comedy works so well. I'm so curious, what was that initial transition like for you going from comedy crowds to metalheads?
Yeah, well, first of all, I mean, Air Supply to me would be the easiest crowd, to perform in front of. It's not like they're coming in like after drinking 15 beers and 10 Jaeger bombs. It's the Air Supply crowd. They're mellow, they're sitting in their seat. You go out and tell a few jokes, but Yeah, you're right, man. The rock crowds, you got to come out swinging right from the start. And I developed a whole 30-minute direct support act just for bands. That's just about music, just about bands, just about musicians. So that at least it keeps it in the family. Luckily, from doing that metal show, I have some recognition factor with the audience. So it doesn't seem too weird. Like, you look the part too, you know what I mean? Like, that's part of it, if you look the part. But you still got to come out, and you still got to be aggressive, and you still got to give the energy of an opening band, because that's what they're used to seeing. They want that kind of energy. So I just try to bring that, and like I said, keep all the material in the family of music. And it's you're right, the audience has been pretty open to it. Every once in a while they're like, no, this ain't happening. But I say the great majority of the time, man, it's really worked well.
For sure, yeah. And it's so cool, man, that you're signed to Metal Blade. You probably have like some of the best sounding comedy albums out there. Amazing label. How'd
Yeah.
you originally like talk to Brian and get signed to that record label?
Well, excuse me.
It is early.
Yeah, the no, that's good. We're on comics hours. I'm up. I remember Jim Florentine had met Brian Slagle first, and he told me, oh, I hung out with him. He's really cool, and he's gonna send me some Iron Maiden bootlegs that he has, and I was jealous of Jim, like he started dating a hot chick that I was in love with. Because I'm like, I want Brian Slagle to send me Iron Maiden bootlegs. Because Metal Blade is such a fat part of the fabric of my musical DNA from when I was a teenager and collecting those Metal Massacre LPs and stuff like that. So, Brian was always, as much of a hero in the scene as all the musicians. And then I opened for one of his bands, Charred Walls of the Damned. And he came to a few of the shows. He's like, man, I've never seen a comedian open for a really heavy band. And he said, I don't know how much material you have, but if you have enough for an album, I'd like to do one with you. And I thought he was kidding around with me. I was like, why would he want me on the label? And here it is, five stand-up CDs later, and we're still going.
And here we are.
Yeah.
And you got that through Richard. Did you met Richard well before that?
Yeah, I know
Opening for
Richard Christie
Chard,
a
yeah.
long time. Yeah, I knew him from doing the Stern Show back in the day a few times. So, Richard and I were friends, and I knew Tim Ripper Owens, who sang in the band. So, when I used to go out to Ohio, I used to put together these little DIY comedy tours where I'd play someone's backyard on Thursday, I'd play a rock club Friday, and then I'd play Tim's place. On the Saturday, he used to have Ripper's Rock House out there, and then I would crash at his house, before I was like playing in the real comedy clubs out there. So I knew Tim forever. So it was for me, it was like, it's just to go out and party with my friends for a couple weeks and get out on the road, and turn into, like I said, a record contract that I wouldn't have believed. And it's, dude, it's an honor to be part of the Metal Blade family, and for now Brian to be one of my close friends is amazing.
It must be so surreal, man, especially growing up with all these artists, like even like doing this shit, like a podcast, it's so cool meeting like your heroes and being able to talk to them, let alone being on Metal Blade. Like, that's insane. Like if I was putting a comedy album on Metal Blade, so cool. So I know, you met Eddie, because you would listen to radio with Jim, right? Like going to gigs.
Yep.
So how did you originally, I know you and Jim have been like comedy partners for a while. How do you guys meet? Like at mics, at a show?
Jim and I met like at a Christmas party for a comedy club in the city, and we both had long hair, both loved the same kind of music. We were both going through our stripper phase at the time, so we bonded instantly. I wasn't even doing comedy yet, so
Oh, wow.
that came later. But Yeah, then when we started doing gigs together, we would listen to, we'd always like try to, we're like, oh, it's Saturday night, Eddie's on, and we couldn't wait to get, like, wherever we were coming from, we couldn't wait to get back into the trunk zone so we could tune him in on the radio and listen, because we're like, God, this guy's like us, man. Like he has all these, all the, he knows all this stuff. Like he has all this, what's most people considered useless information in his brain, like we do. And we met him backstage at an Ozfest, and we just became friends after that. And obviously still are to this day.
Yeah, it's so nice to have like a radio host who's not just playing like GNR greatest hits and like Iron Man on repeat, you know? So I was surprised you have like a college degree, right?
Yeah, college graduate. Yep.
Yeah. Did you do your first mic before or after that? Because it's very rare to have met not only a comic but a metalhead
Yeah,
who
no, I didn't
I
start comedy till later in life, so I was I always loved comedy and heavy music. That was always standard. But yeah, I didn't get into comedy till I was in my 30s, so that definitely came later. But I was always immersed in those two worlds. And for those things to like to now have crisscrossed and both are a huge part of my life. Like most of the press I'm doing for this album, honestly, is rock press,
Yeah.
more than even comedy press, which tells you where I stand in the comedy business. But it's all good with me, man. I wear the rock and roll comic thing on my sleeve. If people understand, what this is, if they get the packaging, and they understand that it's Motorhead and all that stuff, that's great. But they don't have to understand that to enjoy what's on the inside, the content in terms of the comedy or whatever it is I claim to do. Because the comedy's for everybody. The packaging and everything, that's for the rockers and the metalheads.
Yeah, well, you're walking a very fine line because people say doing like stand-up comedy is like the hardest form of public speaking. I'm like, no way. Doing stand-up comedy in front of a band is the hardest form of public speaking. So scary, but it's so cool to be in both industries, you know, to have both sides of it.
Yeah, because man, I tell you, they I know that, the phrase never meet your idols, which has been true for a lot of people, but man, I'll tell you, everybody, almost every single person I've met from, doing that metal show and doing my own podcast and, doing stuff with Eddie and Jim over the years, I've never run into anybody who was a dick. Like everybody in our scene is so cool. I've made so many great friends, but I'm still in awe of them. Like that Phil Campbell played the guitar intro and outro on this album, fittingly, because it's a Motorhead theme. And Phil's become a friend. But when he sent me the files and I listened to him, I was like, God, man, this is incredible that this guy, actually did this for me. And I'm still such a fan. So I'm just still, I never lose that part of me where I'm like, wow, I'm really in awe of these people's talents.
Yeah, just metal is such a tight-knit community. I feel like it's where stand-up would translate best in any genre. And even that whole don't meet your heroes thing, like I remember once I got Chris Poland's phone number and I was like, holy shit, like every time it's just you just can't believe it. And it's like they're just the nicest people ever. So cool, man. So
Yeah,
I
and
wanted
a
to
lot of them are humble,
so humble.
because especially if you're still around, that means your career has ebbed and flowed and ebbed and flowed. And but what's most important is the longevity of it, right? It's not about I got to get up here immediately. It's like no, the kind of music we like, it's sort of like this over the years. And if you can sort of navigate it and, also get into the modern age, I mean, that was the big thing with Metal Blade is they were on with the streaming stuff like way before anybody else. Like they anticipated it before all the big record companies did. And that's why they survived. Metal Blade's almost 45 years old now. So, you got to keep up with the times, but you could still be old school in your approach.
Yeah, for sure. And they have the best of all worlds too, because their pressings also are just some of the best metal pressings of all the labels. So just for like an audio quality side of it, really so cool to be on that. Now I want to touch on that metal show. I always thought it was funny. It seemed like you guys like bullied Eddie Trunk a lot when it
Bullied.
when it came to stump the trunk. Like it was always you guys always seemed to be poking him, trying to get him to react. Was that going on behind the scenes too? Because he always seemed like he was very, when it came to you guys interacting, he was very on edge.
Yeah, well, that's where it started. You hit the nail on the head. Yeah, it would start in the dressing room at rehearsal, because we would just, they gave us all dressing rooms, but we always just sat in the same dressing room. We're not going to have our own thing. That's silly. And we would sit together and hang, and Florentine and I would be poking the bear, throughout the day, and cutting gassers in the dressing room and not letting him leave, and just getting under his skin a little bit, just as friends breaking balls,
Of course.
But yeah, so sometimes when he got out on the set, he was already sort of a little raw. So, it didn't take much to get him worked up, especially during Stump the Trunk, because he really did care about getting it right. Even though it was a TV show and it was edited and you can take your time and do things over, he takes a certain amount of pride in knowing the business, and like he says, I don't claim to know everything, but he does take a lot of pride in it, and those reactions are all real. Like him blowing his top was real. But yeah, there's some stuff that happened that people didn't see.
Yeah, I believe it. And that kind of translates into That Rocks, where like you do the where he has to guess like the band logo. And I'm
Yeah.
just watching you and Jim just laugh as he's like losing his fucking mind over over I think it was like Jungle Rot or something. And you're just what was it? Something of the Wolves.
Oh yeah. Wolves in the Throne Room.
Well, and there the most impossible logos.
And he's like, that doesn't say Wolves in the Throne Room. I'm like, it does. I go, death metal logos, the less readable they are, the more like credibility you have as a death metal artist. So yeah, because we had to come up with some new segments, if we're going to do a new a that metal style show. But with kind of a new name and sort of a new take, but that's been a fun one because I keep teasing Eddie, I'm going to get him into death metal, but I think that's going to be a pretty tall order. He the minute he hears those heavy vocals, he's like, I'm out.
Yeah, that'll be the day. I can't wait to hear his opinions on like Dark Throne or like some black metal. That'd be funny, man. And I think That Rocks is great because you can,
Thank
it's
you.
so nice. What's great about internet stuff is you can, it's so easy to get people on it now. You don't have to fly people out anymore. You don't have to make sure, Lemmy's liquored up or because I know you've been talking about how I think you said once where you do two tapings a day and you made sure Lemmy was on the second one because once these guys
Well, no,
they
Lemmy was because Le Lemmy would Lemmy was way more nocturnal, so he didn't have to do anything before like 4 o'clock in the afternoon, so that's why Lemmy was always on. But no, nobody really came on our show like messed up other than Marilyn Manson. So, but that had nothing to do with the time. That's just him. He showed up at 11 in the morning drinking absinthe straight out of the bottle. So that had nothing to do with what time of the day it was, because I don't think he goes by, those metrics. I don't think he lives by those metrics. It's just whenever he's awake, he's awake. And although I hear he's doing very well now, he's not partying. But yeah, he was a tough interview. That was a tough one to get through. And the people who edited the show did a brilliant job because he was completely off the rails and said a lot of stuff that there was no way he was going to make it to air. But hey, that's Manson. I'm not looking for a shiny, happy Manson. I'm looking for these people to come on as they are, and as they're known to the public. So that's what Manson was up to at the time. But yeah, That Rocks is for people who don't know, myself, Eddie Trunk, Jim Florentine. doing, a digital version of that metal show, and it's called That Rocks, and it's on YouTube, and it's been fun and interesting to redevelop our chemistry in a digital format, like what we're doing here, because you learn how to work with each other on a set, in a controlled environment, and now you sort of have to relearn, when you guys are in a bunch of boxes. But yeah, I think we got, other than the technical problems, which seem to be a through line to all the shows, we kind of have our rhythm down at this point.
Yeah, it's a never-ending war with technology. Like there's sometimes when it's the most fucking irritating shit. That metal show, hanging out with your heroes is awesome. And there must be some behind the scenes, hey, let's go out drinking,
Oh.
Are there any extremely memorable ones that come to mind? I can only assume.
I think the first person to ask us to go hang out was Lars after a taping we did in LA. And I got the thing that was most memorable about it was he took us to the Sunset Marquee, and we're at the outside bar up by the pool, and we're sitting up there, and I'm, me and Jim and Eddie are drinking whatever the cheapest beer on the menu is, and he's drinking Dom Perignon,
Believable.
but the common thread was we spent the whole night, like Lars with his cell phone going, oh, I downloaded this Deep Purple concert from 1969 that I found, and we'd li and we sit and listen to it, and it and that's all we did the whole night, was like share stories about music and playing music and listening. And so while the drinks may get more expensive, the fandom in him has not left him. When you get into it with people who are like-minded, who love music like we all do, we were just three 16-year-old kids sitting around, one of our mom's basement, listening to music and going, isn't this the coolest?
Yeah. At the end of the day, it's just a bunch of nerds, I
Yeah.
feel. Just exchanging bootlegs. I know Lars has a show where he's obsessed with new wave of British heavy metal, and he's a radio show where he shares bands and artists, and it's just so cool. And even talking to some of these guys, you learn that it's just all people. It's like you see this guy's God, and then a second later he's like, yo, check out this bootleg from like 83. And it's like, holy shit, I know that same bootleg. So
Yeah.
it's so awesome. It's so awesome to realize that we're all just fans in the end.
Yeah, and as big as those guys have gotten, obviously, none of them have lost that part of them, which is amazing. And I think that's why Metallica's so connected to their fans, and that's why they're so hands-on with all the things they do. Like, their fan club is not just they, let some 16-year-old kid, return emails for them at a fan club. Like, they're hands-on with all that stuff. They're very fan friendly because they've never lost it over the years, and they know how important that is to connect with fans. Again, getting ahead of the game, understanding, social media is the thing now, and how do we connect with our fans via social media, and how do we connect with them in the modern age, but yet, they're still old school, in a lot of ways. But yeah, to sit up till 4 in the morning and talk about music with Lars was, a night I'll never forget.
Yeah, that's so amazing, man. And I feel like in this day and age, I saw the band Violence the other day. And it's so funny, man, because like half the crowd's in like their 20s.
Oh, wow.
And this is a band, I think their first record was like 86 or 7 or
I still
something.
have it. Yeah.
Yeah, I wish, man. As some of these you're a fan of Purchase Street Records, right?
Oh yeah, love
Yeah.
Purchase. Yeah.
I'm in Massachusetts.
Oh, okay, so you know Roger and
I've
everything.
had Roger on the show.
Okay, yeah.
I've purchased many originals. I've spent way too much money there. Let's just say it's so
You
amazing, man.
and me both.
Yeah, you go there, and he literally, I interviewed him, and in the background, he had a wall from Kill 'Em All to 72 Seasons, all first presses, the Black Album on Vert. It's like, how the fuck did you find all these pressings? Like, how do
Because
you?
he's a bigger nerd as we are, and especially with vinyl, which I am as well. Like, that's my, I don't do drugs, I don't have kids, I spend my money on vinyl. And I literally did a show in his in the record store and got paid in vinyl. That was like, I just want to get paid in vinyl. So I did basically did a free show so I could get some records, and but that's but I love it, I love, I'm gonna put No Sleep Till McSorley's out on vinyl as well. Because I still believe in the physical product. But yeah, Roger's like us. He's just a big music geek, and yeah, his record store is awesome. Half my t-shirt wardrobe is Purchase Street Records
Oh, is
t-shirts.
it? It's so amazing, man. 'Cause you go there, I'm like, hey, man, do you have Bonded by Blood? And he's like, yeah, come in the back. And he pulls out like four copies, and he's like, look through them, and they're like on Combat. I'm like, how the fuck did you
Yeah.
get like, this is a Bay Area band. We're on the other side of the country, but it's so cool, man. But I think it's so awesome that like I was saying, like metal, it's such an ageless thing where it's like all these different people, all different ages, and it must feel great to be into a genre that's almost timeless, you know. And even like being like, I'm 25 years old, you know, I wasn't even fucking alive when like the first two waves of thrash metal were even happening, and it's like I feel like I can talk to most of these people on the same wavelength, and I feel like no other genres have that. So it must feel great that metal is probably, I think this is going to age better than any genre of any of the of other music forms.
Well, I think because you said it before, Brandon, which is, metalheads are loyal. They really are the most loyal fans of any music because, we're sort of, we're sort of dismissed a lot of the times as, oh, it's just a bunch of noise. And so if you don't get it, you don't get it. But if you do get it, you have family anywhere you go in the world. That's one of the things, my album wraps up, with, music is the healer, which my friend Glenn Hughes says at every concert, music is the healer. And it's the truth, And so for us, it's like, whatever kind of music you like, but for us, it's heavy music, and that's the thing that bonds us. It's the thing that unites us. I'm getting over the last probably 4 or 5 years since that metal show's been off the air, I'm getting 21, 22-year-old kids coming up to me saying, "Oh my God, it's great to meet you. I used to watch that metal show when I was 11 with my dad, and now they're young men and women, and they love this music now." Because they watched our show and because obviously they were raised the right way. So yeah, it's something that you pass down to your kids, and like you said, then you go to a violent show and there's 20-year-old kids hanging out enjoying it because yeah, they learned it from their parents or from an older brother or sister. And again, metal's such a it's such a visual thing too. If you can hand down your record collection, that's how a lot of us, the first time I picked up Iron Maiden Killers, I'm like, I don't even know what this sounds like, but I have to buy it just because the front cover was so cool. So I think there's all that stuff goes into play. And yeah, well, what I think we're the underdog, and a lot of people root for the underdog, and we're like, no, we love our music, and that's it.
For sure, for sure. And you've done so much in your career, from you got the metal aspect, the comedy aspect, but you also have the prank call aspects where you terrorize these poor telemarketers, but you can't feel bad because they're the worst kinds of people on the planet. So how did that even start? When did you first terrorize a telemarketer?
Oh, well, so for people who don't know, it's myself and Jim Florentine, and we have 7 volumes of prank call CDs. And the twist on ours is obviously that all the calls are incoming. So, you're invading on our territory. Don't get mad, how we respond. We didn't ask you to call. And a lot of times we expose them, for the phonies that they are, because they're always your best friend, and they want to help you so much, But you Jim and I twist them up, and they show their true nature by the end of the phone calls usually, which is, they're nasty, angry people, and who don't give a damn about you. Yeah, there's seven of them out there. The last one actually went number one on the, it was the number one comedy album in the country. So for two middle-aged guys to make prank calls for a living and have a number one comedy album, God bless America.
And it's so awesome, man, because I grew up with Richard and Sal, and terrorizing telemarketers is such a cool spin on prank calls because no one really does that. Where it's like they're coming to you, so you have the full right to completely tear it apart. And the whole thing where you have a call where you and Jim are just going, "Who, me?" Where you're both on the
Oh,
you're
yeah,
both and you
right.
can hear you guys laughing, where the person's trying to be like, "Who's the guy with the deep voice?" And you both go, "Me." And then,
Who, me?
yeah, who, me? And it's the funniest thing, man. Really, really awesome. I also want to talk about punchlines and backlines. I think it's such a cool format where you're having musicians try stand up. Are there any guys, any musicians who are most memorable first going to the stage doing stand up? I can only imagine how
Oh
that
man,
goes.
dude, that thank you for bringing that up, because it's something I'm super proud of, that myself and this LA comedian, her name is Courtney Cronin, and
Gold, right?
but I told her we don't use that anymore. It's just Courtney Cronin. That's a
Oh,
cool name.
really? Yeah, that is
I
the
said,
double entendre
tell your
on
husband that you're not hyphenating it anymore. It's Courtney
the
Cronin. That's the name. And we've been doing this at music conventions and festivals and on the Monsters of Rock cruise, where we get a musician to try stand up for the first time, and we work with them on it, obviously, and we help them put together a set. And man, it's been awesome. I don't think there's been anybody that we've worked with that hasn't had a great experience. Now, some people are happy they did it the one time and they're not going to do it again, but they're glad they did it. And then there's other people like Chris Cale from Five Finger Death Punch, who very quietly didn't even tell me for about a year that he was quietly doing stand up in Vegas
Wow.
for like the last year plus now. And he's doing now regular spots, and he got his first paid spot like about a month ago. He texted me, and that's awesome. So there's guys like that who really stuck with him. And he's continuing on. But Todd LaTorre from Queensryche was really, really good. Todd, for people who are Queensryche fans, they might not see a side of Todd that I see, since I've been friends with him, which is he's actually a really, really funny guy once you get to know him. And he also really got into, we were talking about comedy, and I'm like, man, you really know how to get into our mind. So I knew he'd be perfect for it. And he crushed it. And the other one I'm proud of is Kip Winger, because Kip's this very elusive kind of, he's sort of an aloof kind of, semi-genius, and I worked on him for about a year and a half to do, and he finally did. And we get on FaceTime with these people and we say, tell us stories, and they start telling the stories, and we write down a bunch of notes, and then we shape it up for them, send it to them. They make a few things, send it back to us, and away we go. So, and Kip, he killed it, man. He really did a great job, and he sent us a nice note afterwards saying how much fun he had, and so that's been really cool. He's a great guy too. He's very dark. He's very curmudgeonly sometimes. He's very dry. And I love that kind of sense of humor. It's like Florentine, just very
Yeah.
dry and, matter of fact.
That's Kip. I would pay a lot of money to see him do stand up. That's so funny. You just bring him on, you just workshop some material. Do you have like a wish list for like if you can choose like five musicians to have on?
As far as doing stand up,
Yeah.
oh man.
Oh my God, I can like obviously Ozzy. I think he'd be amazing. Dave Mustaine, I think would be perfect.
That's a good one too. Yeah, because that would be an unexpected one for a lot of people. You know what I mean? Because like when I asked Kip, When I emailed Kip to see if he wanted to do it, he just wrote me back two words: "Ask Reb," meaning Reb Beach, his guitar player. And everybody knows Reb is a funny guy. He does impressions. He does character. Like he's an off the cuff guy who could almost just go up and do it. I wanted Kip was the. I'm like they won't be expecting Kip, you know. And I think Mustaine, I think in a certain way would be like that as well. To really tap into that side of Dave. But yeah, Ozzy, of course, Ozzy, you know, he still has brilliant one-liners off the top of his head. Alice Cooper's one of the best storytellers, you know, of all time in rock music.
For sure.
You know, the late great Pete Steele would have from
Oh.
Typo Negative would have been a great, you know, stand-up comic as dry and self-deprecating as he was. So yeah, there's a lot. A lot of my inspiration is from frontman Dee Snider. You know, I've talked to Dee about it a few times, and I think I'm getting under skin a little with it. So, you know, don't be surprised if you see Dee doing it.
That'd be excellent, man. And if we could, if at one point this could ever get recorded, I can't see how people would totally eat this up. Like that is just such a funny crossroads. Because famously, I feel like metal frontmen are just funny. Like you have, Dave Mustaine, shit, the insults. He's like Don Rickles sometimes between, if anyone, I remember, he was doing an intro to Holy Wars, and someone kept screaming Holy Wars at him. And he's like, "You look like Eminem, you stupid cunt!" And he starts ripping the guy apart. And it's like, oh my God! It's like I wish I'd love to hear this guy just like do insult comedy. But that's so funny, man. Definitely check that out. When's the next time? Is there any dates planned for that in the future?
We'll probably do it again. There's a festival called what's it called? The Mountain Music Festival. It's the same people that do the Monsters of Rock Cruise, but it's their land event, and it's every August in Gatlinburg, Tennessee. So I think we're going to do it down Gatlinburg, Tennessee. I think we're going to do it down there. But yeah, we do it, like I said, we do it at music conventions, and we've done it at, you know, KISS conventions and stuff like that. So yeah, if you see something called Punchlines and Backlines and you're wondering what that is, yeah, you may be surprised to see one of your favorite rockers up there telling jokes.
Very, very funny. Don, thank you so much for doing this, man. It's been quite a pleasure having you on.
Well, thank you, man. That's cool. You're a comic too, man. So we got to put together a show, me and you, when I come up your way.
Oh, for sure, for sure. Before we end this, I'd love to know what's the best way for fans to like stay updated with like everything you do?
You know, just follow me on my socials, at Real Don Jameson on X, and then Don Jameson Official on everything else: Instagram, Facebook, YouTube. My YouTube channel just got updated. The first single off the album, video and audio available there. And obviously the album No Sleep Till McSorley's, depending on when this airs, is either available for pre-order or it's out now. But either
April
way, you
19th.
April 19th.
Yeah. And that Jameson show, right?
That Jameson show is done, but there's free episodes on YouTube, and I'm going to start transferring them over to my channel. So you see, I did 235 rock interviews on that show, and then That Rocks with Eddie and Jim, which is continuing on. We have seven more shows that we have ready to go, so those will be happening. And I put all that, like I said, all that stuff's on my socials. And just appreciate all the support from everybody, and obviously you as well, Brandon. It really means a lot.
It's an honor, man. I really appreciate this. This has been awesome. I'm Brandon Baddick, and this is Disturbing the Priest.